globally, there's actually never been a better time to reach out and break out of your career echo chamber and talk to somebody who's in a different age group to you and having different experiences, different knowledge bases. You're going to pick up skills that you didn't before.
Hello, you are very welcome to episode 6 of the Leadership Discoveries podcast. And I'm delighted to be joined by Deirdre Wafer. Deirdre is EMEA and LATAM Senior Customer Insights and Data Storytelling Manager for the Marketing Solutions business at LinkedIn. And she is also co-lead of the Wisdom Employee Resource Group as well. I'm very interested to hear a little bit more about that. But Deirdre, in the meantime, you're very welcome. Thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
Thanks very much, Shirley, for the invite. Really interesting to get one of these invites.
Always it is. And, you know, as I say to, you know, a lot of people, this can be a very wide ranging conversation, Deirdre. So let's see where it takes us. I know there's lots of interesting things I want to get your views on. What might be good, though, would be, first of all, can you just tell us a little bit about your own career journey? Because I know you've had a couple of transitions. Very interested to hear about those.
So, yes, I've had a number of transitions across a career. I suppose you could say I have a long career at this point. But I started in Bank of Ireland and then transitioned to what was Guardian PMPA at the time, who became AXA. And then I went from there to a startup, which was Meteor Mobile, who was starting up, and ended up working in a porter cabin for over 2 years. I think people thought I was mad, but it was a wonderful opportunity. And then I went, I suppose from there, I've had a couple of different kind of avenues and journeys. Meteor was taken over by Air. And so there were redundancies in the company with roles being realigned. And so my role was one of the ones affected. And at that time, it was recession in Ireland. So I was one of those people who was out of work for quite a while. And I was in my 40s, which is a tough time to be out of work. Mid-40s, usually one of those times where you start querying yourself and you're starting to do different things. Arising from that, I suppose I started testing out different things. I did some work in the area of consultancy. I did some lecturing. And then I was fortunate enough to get back into corporate life. Was working with Liberty Insurance, who had taken over Quinn Insurance. That was a nice opportunity. It was a rebrand, and there was a lot of challenges from a marketing perspective. It was a wonderful opportunity then to start afresh, create something different. And so that's what we did. I then went from there to work for Virgin Media. And again, I suppose for me, it was the brand attracting me, Richard Branson, and everything that he stands for in terms of a virgin, I suppose, attracted me. But they had taken over UPC. And again, it was a rebrand opportunity, working with some amazing marketing talent and, you know, learned an awful lot again, because the telco world had evolved and changed since I had been in it before. And then somebody reached out to me and said, there's a job in LinkedIn, you should apply for it. And I looked at it and said, well, I'm 52, that's not a job. They wouldn't look at me. LinkedIn is probably not for somebody like me. And I suppose what I would say to people is a lot of that was on me and my perceptions of age and my perceptions of capability and all of those things. And in fact, you know, it's proven to be untrue, I suppose, and I've kept having to challenge myself. But I applied. I ended up getting the role. Now, 7 years later, I'm still working in LinkedIn. And in the last while, I've had an amazing opportunity to get involved in the employee resource group space. Initially, I was a co-lead in EMEA, which is Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And we had started an age-related employee resource group. And that's quite unusual, because in most terms globally, in DEI strategies, only about 8% of companies worldwide would include age in their DEI strategy. So for me, it was an amazing opportunity to get involved in something that talked to me. And in the last year, I had the pleasure of moving into the global wisdom role. So I work with another co-lead globally, and we work on the Wisdom Employee Resource Group, which is about creating inclusive workplaces and a safe place for where everyone can belong, regardless of the age group they come from or the generation. And I think that's hugely important and hugely positive.
Deirdre, just listening to your career story there, I mean, you very much lived what you're probably doing at the moment, you know, in terms of that wisdom, the employee resource group. And I have to say, I love watching your LinkedIn posts, because they're so relevant in this space. And I was particularly taken by one recently where you were talking about one in five Gen Zers haven't had a direct conversation with somebody over 50, and 40% of those over 55 haven't spoken to a Gen Z colleague in over a year. I mean, that's really stark, isn't it? That type of figure.
It is stark. And I think it's stark on all age groups. Because to some extent, what it says is that, you know, we can end up in career echo chambers with people just like us, and not expanding our knowledge base and not expanding our skills base. And, you know, I was very lucky to have the pleasure of having reverse mentoring when I moved into LinkedIn. I had never worked in tech.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people around me who had skills that I didn't have and knowledge I didn't have. And if I hadn't been able to have conversations with younger colleagues and peers, then I wouldn't have been able to learn. And I think knowing it's not that, I suppose, worrying a thing to have a conversation with somebody younger than you are. At this point of my life, most people in the workspace are actually younger than I am. But equally, on the other side, I've had amazing mentors, amazing coaches over my career, from when I was young right the way through. And, you know, that communication has actually, it opened up opportunities for me. It enabled me to be more productive. It enabled me develop my communication skills. And I think, you know, in the study and the report I was referring to, the majority of us as professionals actually know that we have an awful lot to learn from other generations. And in that same study, 74% actually agreed that nearly a fifth don't know how to approach a colleague of another age group.
That's amazing.
Incredible. Yeah, pretty incredible. And yet, if you think about it, and we think about the jobs landscape, with skills for jobs expected to change 68% by 2030, globally, there's actually never been a better time to reach out and break out of your career echo chamber and talk to somebody who's in a different age group to you and having different experiences, different knowledge bases. And, you know, you're going to pick up skills that you didn't before. It doesn't matter how much experience you have. You always have something to learn.
You know what, Deirdre, I'm really struck, I have to say, because it does require quite a lot of courage, what you're talking about. I think even when, you know, I listened to that opening piece from you around your career trajectory, your career journey as such, you know, moving into spaces that are unfamiliar, being open to reverse mentoring. Does it require courage?
I think it requires an appetite to learn more than anything else. And yes, I suppose there's a bit of courage in it. But the only thing I would say is, what's the alternative? That I can't move, that I can't acquire that knowledge, that I don't get access to that skills. And isn't that a far worse thing to contemplate? And so, you know, if you want to keep relevant and you want to stay relevant, then you've no real choice. You need to have those conversations. You need to get involved in things. You need to understand what's changing. So that's what I'd say back.
Okay. And just, you know, that piece around that reverse mentoring, for instance, how do you think it was received from the other side? So from the people who are engaged, or the younger people, inverted commas, who are engaged in actually mentoring older colleagues. How did that go, do you think? How did people respond to that?
I think initially, you know, like everything, you're probably slightly worried, slightly afraid maybe at the prospect. And perhaps you feel like the other person doesn't have something to learn. The reality is it's a two-way exchange. I've learned an amazing amount of technical knowledge. And from feedback I've got, people have learned some things from me as well around resilience, around it's okay to fail. I've been across multiple things in my career where, you know, things don't go to plan. You pick yourself up. We're very fortunate. I'm fortunate to work in the business space. I'm not conducting heart surgery. Somebody is not being under my fingers on the table. So for me, you know, the amount of things that I've learned from other people, and hopefully they've learned some things from me in terms of resilience or in terms of trying new things or in terms of how you communicate. I think all of those things, we all have something to give and something to learn.
And Deirdre, I'm struck by a conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago, and you were talking about the silver economy. Well, I'm going to paraphrase here, maybe not correctly, but I think what you were saying to me here around it, that leaders are missing a trick, because if we don't have that diversity in the creation of products, product development, you know, how can we actually deliver for a diverse group of people, a diverse group of customers?
I think there's a couple of things. So first of all, by 2050, the number of individuals who are age 65 plus is projected to be twice the amount of children currently under five. So if you think about that for a minute, now you get a sense of why the silver economy is one as an advertiser you can't afford to ignore. I think the second thing is that the average five-year-old today, recent Stanford research is talking about the average five-year-old now, half of them are going to live to be more than 100. And if you live longer now, it doesn't mean what it meant in the past. Mm-hmm. So if you think about in 2022, there was research by CreativeX, and it showed that only 4% of people featured in ads globally were actually over the age of 60. So if you think about that, 4%. Mm-hmm. of the population of ads out there. And then you think about what I said in terms of the market opportunity. And we know that there is a piece there, which is the connection that we want to make as brands to people, and how important it is to aspire to a brand and to see a brand that works for me. Mm-hmm. We've seen, you know, numerous campaigns globally where that's happened with brands and you build that connection. But imagine being part of the 4% of people featured in ads who are 60 plus. What does that say to you?
Mm-hmm. It's extraordinary, really, when you put it like that. I have to say, Deirdre, when you put it into the figures, when you look at organizations outside of your own LinkedIn, is enough being done in this space, do you think? Or is there still a lot of runway, you know, to cover?
There's a huge amount of runway. And I think that's the first thing, because all of us, and I'm including myself in this, we all have perceptions of people in different age groups. And many of those illustrate the bias that exists. Typically, we see people who are older as frail, as vulnerable, as unable to learn new things. And therefore, you know, when you think about what happens when the world faces times of crisis or economic downturns, generally speaking, people who lose their jobs, and we've seen it since COVID, there's a disproportionate level of them who are 50 plus who have done that. But then on the other hand, we have some governments who are doing interesting things, like in Singapore, for example, they're starting to fund education systems to break that and fund it for people who are older. And I think that really talks about how you can break the silver ceiling, how you can be there for everybody. In Ireland, age-friendly Ireland, work with many, many companies to tackle bias and reimagine what that could be. And, you know, in the UK, we've seen a campaign around Age Without Limits, which has challenged people's whole thinking. And they had a quiz, you know, and it tested mm-hmm. you when you came out at the end, and it said, were you ageist or not? I challenge anyone to go into their site, Age Without Limits, and try it, because you would be amazed. You think you're not, but you probably, there's probably something there that mm-hmm. holds you back. When you go out to buy a birthday card, even simply in society, we tend to be very derogatory about age. And so if you think about that in a workspace, then all of us as hiring managers, all of that baggage, that bias, we're bringing that into the decisions we make. And yet we need to hire for skills because that is the future of the workforce.
Just what you're saying there, Deirdre, I have to say, it really challenges recruiters, doesn't it, to be unbiased and be prepared to have the conversations, initial conversations with people, and that may be in the older cohort.
It challenges all of us because, particularly if you look at the demographic changes that are happening worldwide,
yeah,
portions of the population who are now in that older cohort. You know, the reality is, if you don't start appealing to people in all working age groups, then you're not going to fill your roles. There mm-hmm. aren't going to be enough people in the younger age groups, perhaps, with the skills you want. You need to reach out. And in America, for example, we've seen a growth in people who are working into their 70s and well into their 70s. And I think that really challenges our perception of people as, I suppose, normal, positive, working, able to move, all of those things about adult life. Traditionally, if you think about when the retirement age came about, people retired and then you didn't live that long beyond that, really, because of the health situation. All our health outcomes have improved. We are living longer and healthier lives. You think about some of your preconceptions. So if I think about my life, I've adapted to, I remember years ago researching ATMs and ATM machines, and in the research, over 90% of people at the time said, oh, we never use those. Imagine what would have happened if we hadn't adapted. We've seen the smartphones, we've seen computers. When I started working, you know, typewriters were there. Now everybody's on laptops and so on, and smart devices. And so we've all had to adapt to a range of things over our lifetimes and continue to adapt. And just because you're one age versus another doesn't mean you aren't adapting.
Mm-hmm. Is it easier to be an older man in the workforce than an older woman, do you think?
So first of all, you know, if we take any of the recent research that's been published around women per se, we all are aware of the challenges around the gender gap. So that's the first thing. There's a gender gap there anyway. The second thing is that we are seeing, you know, some areas since COVID where increasing challenges have come about for women. And that includes the area of hybrid working and so on. So if you ask age, I think it's no more than anything. When age intersects with any identity, including gender, so that could be LGBTQ plus, race, ethnicity, and you add age to it, it compounds the inequities that are there. For older women, is it tougher than younger women? I suppose it depends on your perspective. You know, we've probably got used to certain things being okay, which perhaps people in other age groups aren't used to, you know, and don't accept. But maybe you take it for granted. So therefore, it's an evolution of what's happened. But I think for us, certainly, and there's an awful lot of, you know, published pieces around this, it's harder for a woman, for example, to have white hair, grey hair, and be in the boardroom and visible and involved in decisions. Yes, because we are judged partly on our appearance as well as our capacity to learn, our capacity to make impactful decisions. I think the other thing is we have health issues which do affect our trajectory in life. So we are the people who take maternity leave, who have the children, who then experience menopause. And with menopause, it comes at a point in your life, your 40s into your 50s, when perhaps other things are going on as well. And now you are facing brain fog, you are facing all those things, and your hair is getting grayer. So suddenly you're already less visible. And now there's these issues about your health and your capacity to do things, and you have less energy, or you're experiencing night sweats, or you're just not sleeping at all. Or on top of that, perhaps you're now starting to care for people. And current data is showing that women continue to have a much higher percentage of caring responsibilities and duties than men. So therefore, the answer is it tougher or harder to say? I'm sure some, it depends on your circumstances. We all have different circumstances. But I think certainly it's challenging.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people, and myself included, are probably ticking off the list as you named some of those things there, and just in that piece there, Deirdre. I'm just wondering, like, you know, the point that you make about demographic shifts, I think, is very, very important. And I often wonder if organisations pay enough attention to actually the reality of, you know, the trends that are emerging in terms of aging workforce and shortage of employees in various parts around the globe. And I'm just wondering, you know, when you look at your experience with the Wisdom Group, for instance, are there any tips that you would actually give people who could be listening that, you know, practical things that they should be doing within organisations, you know, to increase this demographic representation and make it a welcoming place as well, I should say, for older workers, more experienced workers?
I think the first thing is just to explain a little bit maybe about the Wisdom.
That would be great.
In LinkedIn. So we are one of a number of different employee resource groups in LinkedIn. We have ones around Women At, we have Out At, Habibi, which is for the Arab world and so on, Middle East. We also have Black At and so on. So there's a wide range of employee resource groups with the objective of helping each of us belong and feel included. So that's the starting point. Wisdom came about because increasingly to the point that there were some older people coming into the workplace. And I should say that, you know, the tech industry by definition tends to be younger than many, many industries out there. So is retail. You know, so Wisdom plays a huge role in A, providing that safe space. It's somewhere that people can belong. It's about an inclusive workplace, regardless of your age group. We are designed as an employee resource group around people who are 40 plus and their allies. And allies are a huge part of our membership. And the reason for that is we want to encourage multi-generational and intergenerational working and workforces. So your allies are a huge part of how you build, I suppose, that story and make it okay to be, it doesn't matter what age you are, you have that capability. From an older worker perspective, I suppose, if I think about that, what can I do? What can you do? I think the first thing is try and keep yourself up to date. With skills. So the world is about skills and the future of the workforce is about skills. And if you think about some of the changes we're seeing, you know, the introduction of AI and so on, recent labour market pulse that LinkedIn did in partnership with the IDA and Microsoft in Ireland, it actually showed that Gen X has the most to gain from using AI to enhance productivity and so on. But it also highlighted that communication is still the most important in-demand skill. And that's true across a range of studies that we see and people-to-people collaboration. So if you think about you as an older person, what can you bring? You bring that ability to work with people, to connect with people because you've been doing it all the time. You bring that ability to pick yourself up if something doesn't go well because you've done it before. And you can share those experiences. The other thing that I would say is, don't make the mistake of not keeping your LinkedIn profile up to date, for example. How many people, you know, set it up and then don't do anything with it? How does any employer know what skills you've added, what you've been doing, and so on? So keep it up, add those. Don't think that it's not important anymore because I'm now 50 or I'm now 60. It is important. And the other thing is, I think just be open to new experiences. Reach out, have a conversation with somebody younger than you. Or if you're in the younger age group, have a conversation with somebody older than you. What's the worst thing that can happen? You say, well, I'm not free. Whatever. Well, you're no worse off.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do, and generally speaking, people are very open to conversations. The main thing is in your head. It's much, much bigger issue for you than it is for them.
Just as you're talking, I'm going back to the start of this conversation, actually, Deirdre, when you were talking about your own career transitions. And I do think it's courageous, I have to say, because I do think people find it difficult when it does come to that transition space, a little bit concerned about their own skills. And your point is very well made around keeping, you know, LinkedIn profiles up to date, because we can actually forget about what we did often, you know, if we don't actually capture these things. But have you any advice for people, if you go back to your own career history and those transitions, what are the tips for successful transitions as somebody who is, you know, taking that leap and moving on to something different, maybe even at later in their career?
I think the first thing is connections are really important. So, you know, your network, who's in your network? If you're targeting a company, do you know anyone working there? Mm-hmm. And if you do, reach out, have a conversation with them, find out what it's like to work there. If you don't know somebody there and you have a LinkedIn profile, well, why not reach out to somebody and ask them, would they be willing to have a coffee with you, have a chat or whatever? The other thing is to look at, you might be a member of a professional body, you know, like the Marketing Society or the Marketing Institute or whatever it is. Go to their events, meet people, get out there, be seen, have the coffee. You know, generally speaking, before an event starts, you stand and you have your coffee. Mm-hmm. That's an opportunity to connect with somebody maybe that you wouldn't normally meet. So do that. The other thing is, and I think particularly it's important, as you transition from one place to the other, leave on good terms. Mm-hmm. You never know where you're going to meet somebody again. The world is very small. The other thing is, those people are going to be the people who are going to hear about other jobs in the future as well. They will move on. You need to think about it as you have this wider network, perhaps, than you've ever thought about. And you will reconnect with people, and people are always open to connecting again. And, you know, out and you say, oh, I spotted you're doing that. Great to see you doing that, or great to connect again. And we're humans, you know, yeah. So do that. And that's the other thing. And the other final thing is really around, be willing to keep taking learning opportunities. And I know that there is a temptation at different points to kind of say, well, I can't move because I have a mortgage, or, you know, I have X, Y, and Z to consider. Some of that is true, and yes, you do, but what are you assuming about the opportunity that's out there as well? And aren't you also thinking something about yourself, that perhaps some of it is about your own confidence? Have confidence in you. If you don't believe in you, who else is going to believe in, and why should they believe in you?
Great advice, Deirdre, I have to say. Deirdre, just one of the things you mentioned a little bit earlier on there was around new technologies. And I always love asking people who come on this podcast with me, you know, just their own thoughts about Gen I, and particularly, I suppose, in the context of the conversation we're having, you know, this intersection of, you know, being older, new technologies, maybe not being so familiar or expert with them. What are your thoughts just generally around Gen I? What's the advice you'd give to people? From your perspective, are advanced technologies, are we talking about friend or foe? Where do you sit in relation to this?
I certainly think they're a friend, definitely not a foe. And so if you think about your lifetime, how many different technologies have come out, you embrace them all. So why wouldn't you embrace this? So that's the first thing I would say, definitely a friend. The second thing is, it's really important to upskill yourself to make the most of AI. And human skills, as I said earlier, they remain really, really important. But there's huge opportunity with Gen AI to enhance productivity, to reduce the amount of time you're spending on routine tasks, to really allow people focus on value-added things, on what's really interesting. So if I think about my day job, when do I use it? So things like recapping and summarizing notes. So if I'm on a meeting, you know, I can hit that and then I get all my notes transcribed from the meeting. Or suppose I have a huge PowerPoint deck and it's quite significant, and I'm going into a meeting where the deck is going to be gone through, I can summarize that into different talk tracks, and then that positions me for that. Or going through my, messages on Teams and seeing what's come up, AI can give me a summary. So those are very practical today examples of things that save me time, make me more productive. The other thing that, of course, I do as well is all of us are sending emails all the time. Some of those are with particular asks. I use AI to redraft my first draft, for example. Then I reread it. Quite often, I accept some of it, I don't accept other bits, but it does save me time. And it often increases, I suppose sometimes I downplay things and it comes back and says, you're not being positive enough about X. And that's great because it's that it helps me be even better as a communicator. So for me, I think definitely a friend.
And tell me this, your favorite AI tools, Deirdre, or generative AI tools, indeed.
So we use Copilot a lot, so that's what I use, but I'm aware that other people are experimenting in different ways, directions for imagery and so on. At this point, I have to admit I haven't gone all the way. I'm getting a lot of training from my younger colleagues who are there ahead of me
Great.
and showing me what's possible. And it's wonderful to have people around me who are so passionate and willing to share.
But yeah, and I mean, you give great examples there, I have to say, just around, your utility of AI and generative AI tools. And, even as you say, just, for people who may be listening who haven't dabbled yet, even just, taking it for some of the more basic sort of improved productivity tasks, it's a really good testing ground, isn't it, to try some of these things?
It's a really good testing ground. I suppose I'm more conscious than maybe other people who are at the start of early adopter journeys or whatever, But as you're a bit older, you become conscious of, what would happen if and so on. So the fact that I can ask other people to do a demo for me, to show me how that works, to tell me what works even better, to give me tips, that's amazing. And the reverse mentor I get there, that's actually amazing. And so I'd like to say thank you to my colleagues on my team who bear with me and show me what's possible.
Fantastic. Deirdre, thank you so much for joining me here today. And something that you said earlier on about the importance of people connecting and not being afraid to connect and maintain connections. I mean, this conversation pretty much came about from that, I have to say, where we worked together a long time ago and we reconnected. And I was delighted to do that. And I was just reminded just how expert you are in many of these areas. And I was delighted that you agreed to join me here today. So thank you very much indeed for that, Deirdre. Thank you for the fabulous insights. I know there'll be a lot of people who'd be really, really interested in some of the things that you're talking about here today. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you, our listeners, too. I suspect you've come from very different parts of the globe and from within different industries also. And I hope that you have found the discussion as insightful and as thought-provoking as I did. By the way, if you'd like to contact me, you can do that on LinkedIn or on shirleycavanagh.com. To our listeners, I hope this has been as useful to you as it has been for me.